3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Well, hi again, everybody, and welcome to another Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, brought to you by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. Tim Elkhorn, along with Joe Tate, our producer this episode, is none other than Bruce Van Dyke, who, of course, you hear on other Over the Timeline shows. So great to have you all back with us. And Joe, I thought it would be interesting, since we are in the midst of college football, to talk a little bit about your history of calling college football, play some audio cuts, and really delve into how those jobs came about, how those relationships with universities came about, and really your love of college football. Everybody kind of thinks of you as the Cavs and the Indians announcer, but you've often said you love calling college football.
Absolutely, and my years with Mount Union were among the best in terms of broadcast experience that I had. Yeah, there's something about college football that I've really enjoyed over the years.
Now, one of the things we'll delve into here in some of the audio cuts that we'll hear is from your time calling Ohio University. Now, in earlier podcasts during our Over the Timelines, we've talked about your history. You were in Illinois. You were in Indiana. How did the relationship with OU come about?
Just your typical broadcast career from city to city to city to city. I got the job at Ohio University by answering an ad in Broadcast Magazine. I'm not even sure Broadcast Magazine still has those ads in the back, but I saw it, answered it, and they replied, and I went down and interviewed for the job. Ironically, as happens on occasion, the guy who talked to me didn't know that another guy was involved, had given the job to Jim Grainer. Remember
Grainer? I do remember that
the
name.
Old
yep.
days? Yeah. Well, so here they had two announcers. Grainer was just going to do football. They had hired me to do everything in terms of sport, and that included classwork. So I went up to Cleveland with Archie Greer, who was in the head of the department, and we had lunch with Grainer and explained the situation. And Grainer magnanimously said, "Hey, you know, he's going to be there full time. He's going to be the voice of the Bobcats, so I will not stand in his way." And so he bowed out, and that's how I got into the football as well as everything else.
So you were actually an employee of Ohio University,
yes.
Not a radio station in the Athens area.
No, it was WOUB, Ohio University.
So how long were you in Athens? How long did you stay there?
Long enough to realize that educational broadcasting and I were not meant for each other. The eggheads drove me insane. So, in fact, it got so bad that Bill Rohr, God love him, who was the athletic director at Ohio U, actually moved the sports department of the radio station and the TV station out of radio TV and put it in the athletic department.
Really?
So I ended up working for the athletic department before I left there in the spring of 68.
So you still have some affinity for OU because you stayed connected to the school in some ways, correct?
Well, yeah. I had a good time, and boy, we did everything that even vaguely resembled a sporting event. But, you know, the people there didn't understand that if you went out and said, "Hey, look, we'll mention your name 20 times in the football game if you'll kick in X amount of cash." Similar to what you do.
And, a little bit.
Yeah. And when the powers that be found out that I was doing that, they got all excited because they said, "Well, look, you get a stipend to do your broadcasting, and if you don't use the stipend," which I did not do, it was still there at the end of the year, "they're going to cut us back next year and you won't have that much." And I said, "Well, fine, I'll just go out and get more. That's no problem." And fortunately, Vern Alden, who was the president at Ohio University, one of the finest men I've ever worked for, he heard the story, and he decided that the idea of going out and selling time within the confines of an educational broadcast facility sounded like a great idea. It's a great way to teach students about what broadcasting was all about. So he stood behind me four square, and I was able to continue to do what I did until I just finally, 3 years of educational broadcasting really... It really finished me off. Fortunately, Bill Rohr got me down to the athletic department, so I didn't commit suicide, but it was close.
Again, we're talking with Joe Tate. It's our Over the Timeline, brought to you by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina. All right, so let's hear a little audio. We're going to go back to November 4th, 1967. So this is 52 years ago, not quite. But almost 52 years ago, OU against Western Michigan. So Mid-American Conference football. By the way, spoiler alert, OU won the game 20-10. I can tell you that. I did a little research on this. But do you remember guys? Do you remember the coaches of those OU teams that kind of stick in your memory?
I remember Coach Bill Hess, who was the football coach at Ohio University. I remember his wife even more because she used to sit next to me on occasion at football games, and every time Ohio University would score, she'd haul off and hit me in the shoulder, and she had a tremendous right cross. And when we went out to Kansas and beat Kansas on their Parents' Day, 30-15, I came back. I needed medical help by the time I got back to Athens because she just pounded the tar out of my shoulder because Ohio U played a great football game that day.
All right. So this is, well, this isn't the Kansas game. This is OU versus Western Michigan. Again, November of 1967. So here is the voice of the Bobcats, Joe Tate, setting the scene.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Joe Tate from Peden Stadium. And this afternoon, the Ohio University Bobcats are at home to take on the Broncos of Western Michigan in what promises to be quite a football game. And below us, we have the band and the color guard out on the field. There is a presentation being made down on the gridiron below us as Athletic Director Bill Rohr is presenting medals for NCAA achievements to of the fine Emmett Taylor, the sprint man from Ohio, as well as to his coach, Dan Huntsman. And in a matter of moments, we'll have today's national anthem. The Broncos in with a record of 4-1 on the MAC, and the Bobcats 3-1 with the forfeiture to Kent State. We'll talk more about that a bit later this afternoon. And, of course, at halftime, that will be one of our key subjects. But the football game today is something else. We'll be back with the lineups right after we take this timeout.
Okay, so I went through the tape. And you must have edited out the halftime, going, I just want to hear the game. So I never heard about the Kent State forfeiture. Now, I'm a Kent State guy. Do you remember why Kent State had to forfeit a football game?
They used an ineligible person to play football for Kent. Oh. Back in those days, if they could find a guy who would be willing to wear a helmet at Kent State, they used him. And this guy happened to be ineligible, so that's why.
52 years later at Kent State, the more things change, the more they stay the same. They just have never really gotten that football program. There's been a couple of instances, but for the most part, the Kent State program has really struggled.
Their Kent State baseball program was fabulous. They were really good.
And still is. Just an outstanding program. Went to the College World Series just a few years ago. I'd say about 5 years ago. All right, so it's OU, Western Michigan. Joe Tate on the call. By the way, a little hum in that phone line, Joe. Was that just a pure phone line feed? You can hear the hum in our headsets.
That was called the Appalachian Aperture. It comes with anything you do down there south of Columbus.
You hear the hum in the phone line. But, hey, OU gets on the board. Here's Joe Tate with a Bobcat touchdown against Western Michigan.
Signals called by Bryant. He goes back. He's looking for Swindell. Pass. Touchdown. Swindell grabs it. There's a flag in the end zone. There's a flag in the end zone, and the official hustles out to the referee who had signaled touchdown, and we'll see what the call may be. It is holding against Western Michigan, declined by the Bobcats. Swindell, the diving catch in the end zone, and the Bobcats are on the board 6-0. And the ground game and the air game of Ohio today, or thus far, although it is early, has never looked better.
Yes, it has, Joe. And the big factor, Phil Swindell, who last week started to shine in the loss 10-9 to the Dayton Flyers. And this week he caught the big pass to put the Bobcats on the boards 6-0.
Brown holds Pataki boots. The kick is no good. He missed it. Off to the left. So Pataki has now missed two extra points. Brown and Pataki are having a discussion with the official, but the official said it was off to the left, and so the score remains Ohio 6, Western Michigan nothing. The Bobcats go 65 yards in 10 plays on a touchdown pass of 8 yards to Phil Swindell. They're on the board first, and there's 32 seconds remaining as the big cannon goes off behind the bleachers at the south end of the football field.
The big cannon goes off.
Big cannon.
Now, who was Irv, by the way? You referenced Irv. He's your color commentator.
That was one of my students. I always use students on the broadcast. This was, you know, Irv. You hit me with an Irv there.
I'm sorry.
He's from New York City. He went back to New York when he graduated and was in the clothing business and was very, very successful. Lived on Park Avenue South. And, but Irv was my... The one time I let him do some play-by-play was when we went to Penn State, and Penn State did a horrible thing to Ohio University, and he never really forgave me for making him do that particular half of the ball game.
And Irv's career in broadcasting ended at that point? Clothing was more to his liking?
Yes, and he made a heck of a lot more money in clothing than he ever would have made in broadcasting.
I'm sure he did. All right, let's hear one more score for OU. All you Bobcat fans out there, going back 52 years, OU in Western Michigan, November of 67. Here's Joe with another OU touchdown.
Again, here comes Ohio up to the football. They lead 6-0. They're at the Western Michigan 3-yard line. Second down, 3 yards to go for a touchdown. Bryant counting it out, long count, in the backfield, give to Conley, Conley dives, touchdown! Came right up right guard and went for the 3 yards into the end zone. The Bobcats 12, the Broncos nothing, and Ohio is turning it on here in the second quarter. And for one thing, I am happy to see this coming at home. We've seen some of this good action on the road, Irv, but this is the first time we've really had an all-out assault in the first half at home, and I know the home folks appreciate it. Brown will be holding for Pataki's boot. It is up, and the kick is good. 13-0. Ohio scores again. And so Pataki will bring the football back up the field to kickoff with 14 minutes and 15 seconds to go. And below us, we see Jim Borland warming up on the sideline. Chances are he will be back in the ball game. 25 yards in 4 plays. The Conley touchdown good for 3 yards, and Ohio leads 13-0 with 14:15 remaining. We'll be ready for that kickoff in 10 seconds after we take this timeout for station identification. This is the Bobcat Football Network.
WOUB, WOUB-FM, Athens, Ohio.
I just love the little sound effect there at the end of the ID. And I love the fact you threw it to Irv, and he had nothing to say.
That, I think, indicated very graphically why Irv went into the clothing business.
You threw it to Irv, and there was the silence. But like a pro, Joe, you just kept right on going. Again, over the timeline with Joe Tate, looking back on some of Joe's college football days back in the mid and late 60s. We'll take a quick time out. We'll hear this message from Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina. And when we come back, Joe goes from the MAC to the Big Ten. We'll hear some Big Ten college football after this on our WEOL Over the Timeline with Joe Tate.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at Life Care twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
Life Care helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. Life Care Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Welcome back to our Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. I'm Tim Elkhorn. Bruce Van Dyke doing a great job and spinning our dials on the other side of the board. So in the first segment, we talked about your days calling OU. And as I mentioned, OU did end up winning that game against Western Michigan. You can go back and Google it. They knocked off Western Michigan 20-10. So now we're going to fast forward a few years. On your tape, at least, it says 1970, Indiana versus Michigan State. So now you're back in Indiana. So you left OU and went back to Indiana? Is that how chronology works?
I went from OU to a station in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, and did Illinois State football and basketball, did some Illinois Wesleyan football and basketball, and then the general manager of that radio station in Bloomington got a job as the general manager at WBOW in Terre Haute, Indiana, and he took several of us with him. And that's how I got to Terre Haute. And one thing led to another, and I ended up working for WIRE in Indianapolis on a part-time basis. I did Indiana football, and I did the pregame and halftime of Indiana Pacer basketball.
Are there any letters in the alphabet that you have not worked for a radio station? I mean, your resume, maybe a Z or a P or something. I don't know. How many different stations have you ever added that up?
No, but there have been a few. Yeah, quite a few, come to think of it.
So it's with WIRE, then you're calling Indiana football.
That's right. I worked with Jerry Baker, who was the voice of the Pacers, and when the Pacers would play a basketball game or he would be on the road with the Pacers, or at one point he was involved with the Indiana network of the 500, and he would be called away to do things for them, then I would just do the games by myself. And so I don't know that this was with Jerry or one of my solo numbers. It didn't make much difference. I had a good time, even though the Indiana football team resembled those early days in Monmouth. They showed up for every game, but that was about it.
Well, Indiana is known as a basketball state. I mean, it is just basketball, basketball, basketball. Is there a fan base? I mean, is there a following for football in that state, or is it all just hoops?
Well, it seems to be a pretty good turnout up at Notre Dame.
Yes.
Purdue, when they're playing well, they draw a lot. And Indiana, when they have good teams, at least until Ohio State shows up, generates enthusiasm. And then usually Ohio State hits them as they did the other day, 51-10, and it kind of turns the attention to when's the basketball season start.
There you go. All right, so this is now Big Ten football, 1970, the Indiana Hoosiers taking on the Spartans from Michigan State. So here's Joe Tate, now as the voice of the Hoosiers, setting the scene for this football showdown.
And we're just about ready to go. Allen is averaging 25 yards, and Matthews 21 yards, and Anderson a bit better than 12 yards in kickoff returns this season. Gartner, who was really demonstrating his fine toe in preseason in the pregame warm-up, boots this one end over end down the middle of the football field, and it goes to Allen at the 5, 10, 15, and 20, 25 and moving up to the 27-yard line, knocked down by Mad Dog McGuire. And it's rather fitting that McGuire got him, because we have about 120 souls from Saugus, Massachusetts in the crowd today, and they are celebrating their own little Mad Dog McGuire Day, and Ed made the opening tackle. Ball at the 27-yard line, and the Spartans go on offense.
Yes, Mad Dog Day. You were ready for that one. It happened on the opening kickoff.
Mad Dog McGuire, he was one of the few big names in Indiana football. In fact, I believe he was all-conference that year.
So, if your tape is correct, 1970, so September, October, you're getting pretty close to now joining the Cavaliers. So how did that timeline shape out?
It happened I think the last game I did for Indiana, it was the Illinois game, and Indiana lost that one by 1 point when they ended up on the one-foot line at the end of the game and didn't get it in for the score that would have put them on top.
So you actually went from WIRE in Indianapolis to the Cavs job. That
yes.
was the place you were
right.
before Nick Mulledy gave you the call.
Yep. And, well, I was also at WOUB because I was just working part-time on WIRE. That was just strictly something I did for the Pacers pre and half. And also, I was the Mike Snyder of
Easy.
The Pacers.
No, I'm teasing. Mike's a great guy. So you took the Cavs job, and then a couple of years later, as we've documented during these podcasts, you then joined the Indians. Were you missing football? Was there that itch to still call some football? Because as you've said, you really love calling football.
Well, I got to say, I suppose it was in there somewhere, but when you suddenly get a chance to do big-time play-by-play for the first time in your life, just the fact that you were there. I remember the first time I walked into Boston Garden and saw the parquet floor, even though the place was a dump, to me, it was a real epitome of big-time NBA basketball, and that's when I had that feeling, by golly, I made it.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Indians, when I got a chance to do the Tribe and sat down in that TV booth in 72 with Rocky Colavito, of all people, and was doing the games. You know, I had so many things going that I didn't have time to think about college ball. And it wasn't until Harry Paytas of Mount Union called me and said, we're going to do a playoff game on TV, and we're looking for a play-by-play guy. Do you think you could come on down and do it on a Saturday afternoon? And that's when I thought, gee, you know, that's one thing I've really missed is college football.
That's cool. Are you still a college football fan? You dial it up and watch it or listen to it?
Not really. I'm messing around with my model trains and things like that. So I've moved on, as they say. But, you know, I still have a very soft spot in my heart for especially Mount Union.
That's very cool. By the way, a little bit of a sneak peek, since you mentioned it, our next podcast with you and I, with the Cavs season right around the corner, we do have your tape of your very first Cavs game. So with the Cavs season about ready to begin, I think that'll be fun on our next podcast. We'll go through that very first game you did for the Cavaliers. You remember that one well?
Yes, we lost.
I think in 1970 they lost quite a bit, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes.
But that's our next podcast. So that does it for this edition of Over the Timeline, presented by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina. Tim Elkhorn, along with Joe Tate and Bruce Van Dyke. Joe, any parting words before we move on?
No, it's it's one of those things, and I hope that Irv had a great clothing career. I know he did, actually. And if I could think of his last name, I'd sure put it in there, because somewhere along the line, Mike Luck, one of those guys that was another student who listens in on occasion, he will call me when he hears this and say, you ninny, don't you remember Irv so-and-so?
It's kind of like when you threw it to Irv and he had nothing to say.
That's right. It's payback.
There you go. Joe, thanks to you. We'll talk again in our Over the Timeline series. We thank you so much for listening. And from the WEOL studios, so long, everybody.